striking young athlete in a picture on the wall. "That's our man in action, skiing the deep powder at Taos, New Mexico, unless I'm mistaken."
"No, man, you're totally right. Taos is one of the best places in the world for us powder hounds. I loved skiing there, pure bliss."
"So you're a ski pro, Ty?"
I asked the charismatic store owner.
"I was, dude. I used to race all over the world, but had to give up competitive skiing in my early 30s after I shattered my knee at an event in Kitzbühel, Switzerland. For a few years after that, I worked as a ski instructor at some of the most fun ski resorts in the world. Places like Whistler, Canada, Val d'Isère, France, Cornuk Peak in New Zealand, and Aspen, Colorado, right here in the good old U.S. of A. And then I somehow found my way out to this noisy jungle of a place. Figured there were at least a few people who needed skis here in New York City. And I've never left. In the summer, I sell mountain bikes. Hey, as you can see, it's not that big of an operation. And to be real with you, dude, I'm not getting wealthy doing this. But I wake up every morning working at something I really love doing. And as we used to say when I made my living skiing, I may not be rich, but I have a rich life. Turning people on to the amazing sport of skiing gives me a nice kick, and it keeps me close to the snow because I still get a chance to take a few ski trips every year with some of my suppliers. I'm a happy guy, and in my mind, that's what matters most.
I'm impressed, Ty. It's a pleasure to meet you, I offered.
Nah, the pleasure's all mine. Tommy tells me you fought for us in the war in Iraq.
Yes, I did, I answered, unsure of what that fact would provoke from Ty, but hopeful for the best after hearing Anna's appreciation for my military service.
Well, before I give you what you've come here to get, come on over here and let me give you another hug, dude.
I walked over and Ty grabbed me for a second friendly hug.
Been reading a lot about what all you soldiers have been going through, dude. My heart goes out to you and your fellow warriors. I know lots of you guys who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I've had to deal with that post-traumatic stress stuff once you come back home, along with a ton of relationship challenges when there's wives, girlfriends, and kids involved. I feel for each of you. And while I know me saying thank you probably doesn't make much of a difference to you, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for all you and all the others who served with you have done for us. We're able to live with the freedom we have because of the courage you've shown.
I didn't quite know what to say. I hadn't felt this honored for my military duty in a while. And I was beginning to realize more than ever before that what I was perceiving as a nightmare was actually nothing more than an event that had occurred in my life. And as a leader without a title, I had the natural power within me to determine what meaning I attached to any circumstance I'd been presented with. By finding a positive and useful interpretation, I'd be flipping the switch from victimhood into leadership. By quickly reframing something I'd thought to be bad into an event I could now view as good, I would accelerate my success and activate my inner leader. And part of that essential transition meant that I needed to stop making excuses for what my life looked like before I met Tommy, and realize that my deployment in Iraq was actually a period of profound personal growth upon which I really could use to build an even brighter future. I wouldn't have been ready to make all the changes I was now in the process of making if I hadn't endured those experiences. And all the challenges of my past could be seen as preparation for the oncoming leadership in my future. I also noticed that with this radical reframing of my military service, I was feeling happier and more energized than I felt in years. What you're telling me does make a difference, Ty.
And you're welcome, I replied quietly.
So come on right in, Blake,
Ty said as he motioned for me to have a seat in the corner of the shop.
Maybe I'll be able to repay you a little by sharing some really powerful ideas and tools that will continue to shift the way you work and live. Tommy told me you both were coming, so I picked up some salami and cheese sandwiches for us.
Did you take him to see Anna this morning?
Ty asked Tommy.
Of course,
was the pleasant reply.
Quite a woman, isn't she, Blake? Beautiful, smart, and awesomely good, noted Ty joyfully.
She's pretty special, I agreed. She taught me some really fantastic things this morning, starting with the first principle of the Lead Without a Title philosophy. You need no title to be a leader. I left that meeting changed. Without a doubt, I just feel really different.
Great on you, dude. I guess the pressure's on me to perform now. So you're learning all about what it means to lead without a title, and that leadership is a sport for every person alive today, Not just CEOs, generals in the military, and heads of state. Pretty fun stuff, man. It'll transform your whole life if you let it. I only wish more people were aware of our method. Businesses would not only be a whole lot more profitable, but they would also become much better places to be. And every community in this big world of ours would improve. Man, I so wish every single one of us understood the power we have to lead in all we do and use our lives at peak.
You can feel better knowing that the philosophy is already making a big impact on me, Ty. Like I said, I feel changed now. And I know I'll be working at BIW and behaving as an FMOB as a result of what I'm learning today, I said with a smile.
The kid's getting it, Tom. I like him already, Ty passionately replied as he faced Tommy. That's the power of good ideas, dude. One good idea is all you need to break through a completely new game. A single big thought carries with it the ability to shatter all your barriers. One intelligent insight can inspire you to make a decision that shifts you into a revolutionary new way of performing. My man Oliver Wendell Holmes said it well. A mind once exposed to a new idea never regains its original dimensions.
So listen, Ty continued, getting focused as he handed me a thick sandwich on multigrain bread and a cool bottle of water. My job here today, as part of your schooling on leading without a title, is to entertain you. With that, he shot up to his feet and grabbed a ski that had been leaning against the wall. He pretended it was a guitar and started singing the old Aerosmith song, Dude Looks Like a Lady, at the top of his lungs. Tommy began to laugh. Seeing the startled expression on my face, Ty burst into laughter, too. He then put the ski down and high-fived Tommy. Clearly, these two had become great friends, and I could tell they respected each other enormously.
Nah, just kidding, Blake. Just having some fun. Gotta find ways to have a good time in all you do. But seriously, my job today isn't really to entertain you, although I do hope you have a great time in our hour or so together. And I think it's true that no matter what we do in business, we all need to be entertainers, inspiring our customers to love doing business with us. Anyone in business is in show business, as far as I'm concerned. And when we go to work, we're on stage. We need to perform and dazzle the audience. No one cares if you're having a bad day. They just want to get the show that they've paid to see. But my real goal here is to share the second leadership principle of our philosophy with you so that your inner leader awakens from its sleep even more and you get to express your absolute best even faster. And that principle can be stated in 5 simple words. Turbulent times build great leaders. Skiing just happens to be the perfect metaphor to bring that point home to you, and so that's why you're here with me today.
Turbulent times build great leaders. I like that line, Ty. It's sort of like the cliche, when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Yeah, agreed Ty, as he passed a hand through his blonde hair. Look, I run a business. You work in a business. It's incredible what's going on in the business world today, dude. It's all so chaotic. Everything's changing. Harsh uncertainty blended with deep negativity. All the rules of the game are different. Competition is more fierce than ever before. Customers are less loyal than they've ever been. Technology has totally altered the way we work, and globalization has leveled the entire playing field so that only organizations made up of people showing leadership without a title will be left standing. It's stressful, and it's confusing, and super scary for most of us, bro, he shouted, waving his arms for dramatic effect.
I have to agree, Ty. Even at the bookstore, I'm feeling more pressure to get things done more quickly than I've ever felt. And everything really does seem to change pretty significantly every few months. My managers change, the way we process inventory changes, our IT systems constantly change. And we're expected to stay on top of it all while we do better work. I feel overwhelmed a lot of the time.
I hear you, noted Ty, now looking thoughtful and serious. And the pace of the deep change in business that's happening across multiple industries has no plans to slow down, dude. It's only gonna speed up. And if you stick your head under your desk and hope the avalanche of change will all go away, you'll end up suffocating, just like some poor soul caught unprepared under an avalanche of fresh mountain snow. No real hope of survival.
I was struck by his powerful metaphor on managing change in business. Ty continued,
If you fight against it all, you'll end up in trouble, man. That would be like resisting the pitch on some crazy ski run that brings your heart up into your throat when you peek over the edge from the very top. the only way you're ever going to make it down to the bottom in one piece is to commit to the fall line and embrace it versus resisting it. The only way to reach safety is to lean into the mountain.
Commit to the fall line? I questioned, unfamiliar with this term.
All it means, Blake, is that to ski down the tough runs, you need to do the very thing that it seems you should most avoid doing.
And that is? I wondered aloud.
You need to actually lean into the steep slope in front of you, rather than try and lean closer to the mountain for protection against falling. You need to actually move closer to the place you most fear instead of pulling back from it. Yes, it's completely counterintuitive, but unless you adopt that technique, you'll definitely be in trouble, and some ski patroller might find you frozen on the mountain after everyone else has gone home.
Your metaphor applies to me working at the bookstore, doesn't it, Ty?
If I don't lean into the change that's coming at me, and instead try to protect myself by pulling back into my old way of operating, I'll end up frozen on the mountain, so to speak, and suffocated under that avalanche of change you spoke about, right?
Dude, that's exactly right. But when you just relax into it all and embrace all the fear that comes up when you don't know all the answers and exactly where you're going, the same way I skied some of the most treacherous runs on Earth, some remarkable things start to happen.
Out on that razor's edge, where you feel your greatest discomfort and all your limiting beliefs start to scream through your brain, and you think there's no way you'll ever make it down. Buddy, that's when you're most alive. And that's the place where your biggest growth happens. The fear you move through when you go to the edge of your limits actually causes your limits to expand. And that expansion not only translates into far better work, but much greater performance in every other area of your life, man. When you consistently move closer to what you are resisting rather than push it all away, you become not only way more confident in the way you do business, you will also become far more powerful in the way you lead a life. And you really get to see how strong you truly are. Being bold and embracing opportunities that fill you with fear actually turns that fear into power and introduces you to your strengths. As Nietzsche said, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Amazing insights, Ty. Definitely helpful for where I'm at professionally and personally. So, change is actually a good thing.
Most definitely. And turbulent conditions can actually elevate your skills, show you hidden talents, and boost your game. Look, when it comes to skiing, anyone can look like a pro on the easy runs. The true test of your ability is how you ski on the hard ones. When the going gets tough, that's when you get to see how good your technique truly is, and how great a skier you really are. And it's precisely the same thing in business. Anyone can be a star when the economy's strong, the competition is weak, and your customers are loyal. Difficult times are the ones that reveal what you're made of, or what kind of a leader you actually are.
Ty paused and took another bite of his sandwich, chomping hungrily as pieces of bread fell onto his sweater. After taking a gulp of water, his insightful discourse on leadership using the metaphor of skiing continued.
What you resist will persist, but what you befriend, you begin to transcend, Blake. Look, when the terrain changes on a ski slope, your technique needs to change with it. You need to adapt. Otherwise, you'll fall and get hurt. The way you ski a nice groomed run isn't the same way you'd ski deep powder. Same thing applies to the way we work right now. New conditions call for different technique. You need to adapt.
Otherwise, I'll fall and get hurt, I reiterated, fully focused on the lessons this fascinating former ski pro was revealing to me.
Right. And the best single technique you can apply is to lead without a title. This simple idea is what'll separate the best in business from those that fall as we head into the future. Any organization that builds leaders at every level will easily move through the change caused by these uncertain times. Actually, any enterprise that adopts the lead without a title philosophy will actually find that these challenging times are a blessing, while their competition goes the other way and gets buried.
A blessing?
Sure. It's like I was saying, anyone can look good in easy conditions. So when the business environment was safe and predictable, it didn't take a lot for an organization to make money and grow. But now, we're in the messy snow, so to speak, and onto some wildly steep mountains. Only excellent technique will work, and that means leading without a title. The organizations that understand this will find that they have a lot less competition and a lot more opportunities for far more growth in these turbulent times. Companies that are made up of clusters of leaders will actually accelerate their growth by speeding up the rate of innovation as their competition pulls back, build better teams by investing in people while their rivals shrink training budgets, and pick up top talent as their industry peers lay people off. And so fast companies get that unsettling times are actually gifts for them and periods to get so far ahead of the competition that they can never catch up.
Cool, I replied.
So to adapt to this period we're going through, I encourage you to seriously embrace the chaos, Blake. Welcome the danger, take some intelligent risks, and have the courage to concentrate your greatest abilities on your largest opportunities, even if that thought frightens you. The more you lean into your fears and move toward your challenges, the more staggering the rewards that will come your way. The more you do the things you're scared to do, the more you'll be showing real leadership. And the more you give to your work and to life itself amid deep change, the more you'll receive. Life's pretty fair like that, Ty noted, sounding a little philosophical. You get back in direct proportion to what you give it. All the disruption out there will take you to some beautiful places, man. It's all a gorgeous gift. All of it.
Ty added,
and the real idea to remember from this time we have together is that turbulent times build great leaders. It's the most difficult terrain that creates the best skiers, and it's the most uncomfortable of conditions that can be the crucible that forges the best leaders. That's really the key piece to our conversation, dude. But because it can be so frightening to stretch beyond the runs we're used to skiing, we generally avoid the scary stuff. And in so doing, we miss a glorious chance to reclaim more of our buried potential. Resisting what makes you feel uncomfortable at work might seem like a way to stay safe in these wild times, but in the long term, it's actually a very dangerous maneuver. What made me a fantastic skier was my pure love for hunting down the most treacherous of chutes and the deepest of snow. I learned early on that the only way I'd get good at skiing super hard terrain was to ski super hard terrain regularly. That willingness not only brought out the greatness within me, it also gave me the experience I needed to win all those world championships.
And all those lovely women that came with them, Tommy interjected with a wink. Blake, you wouldn't believe some of Ty's stories. This guy's really lived the days of his life. But let's leave that for another time.
Another time, agreed Ty. Wouldn't want to overload our young friend here, Tom. What I'm trying to get at, Blake, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but good coaching does involve the repetition of the laws of success, is that these turbulent times in business actually carry with them incredible opportunities for each of us to become remarkable leaders and to build even better businesses. Most people hide in their shells when the going gets rough. They retreat into their bunkers. They push away anything that pulls them the least bit out of their comfort zone. And sadly, in so doing, they also push away their chances for growth, mastery, and lasting achievement. The brave don't run. Never forget that, dude. The brave eat their fear before their fear eats them.
The brave don't run, I repeated in the hope of remembering this valuable line.
I recall one time when I was skiing in New Zealand at the Remarkables. It was before I became a pro and was good enough to race full-time. The head of the ski school, a world-class skier named Michelle, and I hiked up to the summit of one of the tallest peaks. At the top, part of me was awestruck by the breathtaking beauty that enveloped us. I could see the Southern Alps and gorgeous lakes leading all the way to the edge of the horizon. New Zealand's like that. But another part of me was terrified. Yet I knew that to retreat down the mountain was to retreat from my next level of excellence as a skier, and a much higher degree of confidence. Because as I mentioned, Blake, when you go to your limits will expand. So guess what I did?
You ate your fear and skied the run, I replied, feeding back some of Ty's words to show him I was listening intensely.
Yep. I turned the volume on the screaming voice of fear down to zero, and I skied down that run like I've never skied any run before it. I gave it everything I had. I leaned into the mountain, pushed my abilities to the edge, and reached for my absolute best. And because I stepped up to the challenge that the peak presented, I reached a completely new peak for myself. I conquered an inner Everest that morning, dude. My skill as a skier shifted in a massive way, my self-belief soared, and the caliber of personal respect I had for myself as a man shot into the blue sky. We all have our own Everest lurking deep within our hearts. You need to be dedicated to climbing them every day. Remember, you'll never know how high you can climb if you don't even try. And you're not truly alive unless you're pushing risk and eating your fear, Ty shared energetically as he paced into the center of the small store. So, leaders without a title viscerally understand that hard conditions reveal a person. They totally get that difficult circumstances, while scary, are also exhilarating. And they have an intense understanding that hard times are the best opportunities to show leadership. The more extreme the conditions, the more excited they get about the chance to not only see what they're made of, but also to step into their greatest selves. So rather than resisting discomfort, they run to it, man. And because they work and live like this, the things that once filled them with discomfort eventually make them feel comfortable. Cool, huh? The more time you spend outside of your comfort zone, the wider it grows. And that means the more you stretch, the more things that once scared you now feel normal, added Ty.
Big idea for you there, Blake, interjected Tommy.
Another thing I learned from skiing difficult runs is that they held up a spotlight on my deficiencies. Like I said a little earlier, on the easy stuff, anyone can look like a superstar. But when you get on the steep slopes, your weaknesses begin to show up. Problems with your stance or your balance or even issues like holding the poles the wrong way all get exposed because you're under pressure, and so your technique's being tested. And that's another opportunity because you get to see what you need to improve if you want to get better.
And it's the same in turbulent business conditions, I contributed. Deficiencies get amplified under pressure, right?
Right. Personally, during intense times, you can discover your weaknesses and become aware of your constraints. And organizationally, during times of real change, companies can learn what's limiting them so that they can pivot with speed to become even more efficient, effective, and profitable. Intelligent enterprises get that hard business conditions deliver free consulting advice that will only make them faster and even more successful.
That's a great way to look at it all, Ty. So, I sense that you're basically suggesting that I learn to become comfortable with discomfort and to lean into all the messiness that's out there versus pulling back and clinging to my old way of thinking and behaving like a frightened skier clinging to the mountain.
Only if you seriously want to grow and become dramatically more effective as a leader and as a person. The very things that make you feel afraid are the very doorways into your leadership best. One of the daily practices of excellent leaders is that they do something that stretches them and causes them to confront their limits. See, there can be no growth or progress without that feeling of nervousness in the pit of your belly and discomfort in the core of your body. The majority of our society teaches us from a very young age that to feel uncomfortable is bad and wrong and a sensation to be avoided at all costs. And so we play and stay small. We don't venture much beyond our regular routines and the activities where we feel safe and at home. But because we cling to the safe harbor of the known, we experience zero adventure. We fail to conquer new lands, and we never summit to our peak.
And then ski down it, I said.
And then ski down it, dude, Ty affirmed. Resisting the opportunities that change brings is a tragic way to live.
Ty was silent for a moment. Then he added,
My father died like that, Blake. Worked 12-hour days in the same factory his entire life. Every night, to numb his emotional pain on a life half-lived, he drowned his heartache in alcohol. I knew that at his core he was such a good man. He truly wished for the best for us, but he couldn't get out of his own way. He just never caught a glimpse of the leader he could have been. So he just kept on working and living exactly the same way. No reaching, no venturing, no expanding. He died when he was only 62, quietly and with almost no one noticing. It was as if his whole life never mattered, as if he'd lived for no reason, all because he was too scared to conquer his fears and run toward what he resisted, all because he just wouldn't dare to leave his comfort zone, all because he allowed the voice of doubt to get the best of him. The philosopher Seneca said it so well. It is not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It is because we do not dare that things are difficult. I still think about my dad a lot,
There's not a day that goes by without me remembering you, and promising myself I'll never go down that way.
Sorry to hear about your father, Ty, I spoke softly.
Don't be sorry, dude. My hard childhood strengthened me, and my father's example became a cautionary tale showing me what not to do and how not to live. So it was yet another gift. It taught me the difference between breathing and truly living, and the absolute necessity of choosing growth over complacency, even though complacency feels better in the short term. Anyway, please just remember the idea that the more time you spend in your discomfort zone, the more your comfort zone will expand. It'll help you so much in your work at the bookstore. Hey, cross your arms, Ty instructed.
I did as I was told.
How does that feel to cross your arms like that?
I don't know. It feels normal, I guess. I always fold my arms this way. I'm not really sure what the purpose of this exercise is, I admitted.
No worries, it'll be clear in a minute. Now cross your arms the opposite way from the way you usually cross them.
Contrary to my habit, I now forced myself to put my right arm over my left one. I'd never crossed my arms like this in my life. It felt odd.
This feels weird, I mentioned to Ty.
Tommy was watching me with amusement. I could see he was having fun.
It should feel weird, Blake, Ty indicated. Anytime you try something new, it's gonna feel weird. Public opinion will tell you that because something feels weird, you're making some mistake. The mob mentality says if something feels uncomfortable, go back to what feels natural. But like I've been encouraging you to remember, anytime you run toward change and growth, it's bound to feel strange. That's a good sign. It only means you're leaving your safety zone. New patterns of thinking and behaving are being wired in. New forms of knowledge are being installed. Your personal frontiers are being expanded. What a perfect thing, even though it feels weird.
So weird is good, I asked with a laugh.
Of course it is. If you're not feeling that discomfort we've been talking about, you're not changing, you're not growing, and you're pretty much wasting your time.
I kept my arms crossed in the new way I'd placed them over my chest. This was getting more interesting.
Did you know that everything in your past, including all the messiness, was necessary preparation to bring you to the edge where you are finally ready to make the leap into the leader that you truly are? All that's happened to you has been superb, man, Ty stated confidently.
I'm understanding that, Ty, I acknowledged.
I thought more about my time in Iraq. Nothing of any value was ever accomplished by escaping into a bunker, and running away from a difficult scenario never made anyone a hero. As a unit, our gains inevitably happened when, in the heat of a battle, we flawlessly executed our strategic plan and then swooped in for the victory, oblivious to the threat of danger.
The fact was, the bigger the risks that were present, the larger the rewards that were available. That's exactly what Ty was reminding me of.
Hard times only feel bad. In truth, they serve us so very well. They make us stronger. They connect us to our dormant potential. Yes, they make us feel uncomfortable. Yes, they create confusion within our minds and provoke fear within our hearts. But the reality of the matter is that the conditions that challenge us the most are the very conditions that lead to our greatest growth and to our most fulfilling achievements. As if reading my mind, Ty said, great leaders have the deep understanding that anything that helps you expand and grow as a person is a very good thing indeed. And in these uncertain times, growing yourself and your leadership best is your single best survival tactic. I should also say that things often have to fall apart before they can be rebuilt in a much better way. You can't reach a place of breakthrough without going through a period of breakdown. It's scary because as you transition from all you were to all you can become, and from your former way of working to a better way of performing, you're out in the sticky snow of the unknown for a while. And being out in the wilderness of the unknown brings up our limiting beliefs and our greatest fears. You bump up against your insecurities. You meet face to face with your self-doubt. The main thing to understand during this period is that any time you are moving nearer to growth and embracing deep change, your fears will surface. That's just part of the process of developing new skills and awakening more of your natural leadership potential. You're letting go of your old way of being and leaning into a new one.
The foundations on which you used to stand are crumbling, and that feels really uncomfortable. But again, it only feels uncomfortable. Nothing's wrong here. Your old foundations and traditional structures need to fall apart so better ones can be constructed. This is how change works. But out of confusion always comes clarity. From chaos always flows order. And if you fearlessly stay with the change process, you'll actually arrive at a new order that is significantly better than the one that existed before all the transition began.
So, breakdowns lead to breakthroughs, I confirmed.
Yep, don't give up. Just keep moving closer to your discomfort and taking even more intelligent risks. Each of your fears will steadily begin to vanish. Do what frightens you daily, and you'll elegantly transform fear into power every day. That's how you build self-confidence and become invisible. Push risk, hug change, go for your biggest opportunities. And each time you do, your inner leader is fed more fuel. And soon, you'll arrive at a place where anything is possible. So, back to my metaphor. The being out there on the edge of that mountain peak terrifies you. It really is the safest place anyone in business today can be. Out on that edge, embracing all the change, feeling off your center, and releasing the way you used to do things isn't easy. But it's the only place leaders hang out. It's also a place of intense freedom, man. Oh, by the way, all of the fears that are chaining your progress as a leader and as a person are nothing more than the lies you've sold yourself. Stop investing in them, because life's just too big to play small.
I love what you just said, Ty. I am completely inspired listening to you here in your shop today.
Me too, Tommy added enthusiastically. You definitely get better with age.
Ty chuckled, then got right back into his commentary on how turbulent times build better leaders.
Look, Blake, an essential part of the whole lead without a title method is to start doing a lot more of what you know you should be doing every day in your work, but in the past have been too timid to do. Scared gets you nowhere. Lucky people don't get lucky. Lucky people create lucky. And they do this by taking bold risks and seizing excellent opportunities. Staying on the beginner slopes is foolish if you want to become an expert skier. You need to move up to the tougher runs. And yes, they'll cause you to fill up with a ton of discomfort.
But that's part of the process of growing, right?
Exactly. No discomfort means no growth. That's why I say it's actually safest out on the steep slopes.
Is that really true? I asked sincerely.
Sure, because sticking to the easy terrain is a surefire way to end up as a failure as a skier. You'll never get better. You'll be trying to be safe and secure on the beginner slopes, yet end up mired in mediocrity. So those unchallenging runs are actually unsafe places, if reaching your fullest potential is your goal.
And the same metaphor holds true when it comes to leadership at work, right, Ty? Refusing to embrace change and seize opportunities to perform better simply because I'm trying to stay safe in my comfort zone is actually putting me in a highly unsafe and dangerous place, because it'll just lead me to failure in my career.
Actually, behaving like that in the period of such disruption in business will probably get you fired. So you're right, refusing to change and grow is the most unsafe place you could be,
Ty noted supportively.
It's pretty powerful to hear that embracing the deepest of change out on the edge under the most challenging of conditions is actually the safest place to be.
What a paradox, I offered candidly, as I bit into more of my salami sandwich.
Dude, that's the paradox of change. Most employees and most businesses avoid dealing with change. They really do stick their heads in snow and hope it'll just go away. They pretend everything's going to be okay if they cling to business as usual. But it won't. Normal is gone. Business unusual is the new usual. And complacency has now become the primary enemy of victory. The safest, most intelligent place to be is out there on the edge of that cliff, loving all the changes, using them to your advantage to grow as a leader. I love the scary runs, man. Like I say, makes me feel most alive. Reminds me of what the great high-wire walker Carl Wallenda once said. Life is lived out on the wire. The rest is just waiting. What if you were most alive when you were out on that growth edge? Why would you possibly avoid it, man?
Makes sense. I responded, taking another bite from my sandwich.
Mario Andretti, the race car driver, once said, "If everything's under control, you're going too slow." And I need to repeat something again because it's so important. Things really do need to fall apart before they can be rebuilt. Deep change is a purifier of sorts. Yes, it can tear down the very foundations on which your thinking and way of operating have been built. But just maybe, those old foundations need to come down to create space for even better ones to be installed. And during the transition process that lies between the old structures coming down and the new ones being put in place, it's a really stress-filled, uncertain time. But just maybe, it's like the transition of the caterpillar morphing into the butterfly. It looks like a mess, but something even more beautiful is being created. What the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls the butterfly, said the novelist Richard Bach. Disruption is usually the beginning of real improvement showing up. The old needs to be cleared out before space for the new and better can arrive. I thought about my grandfather. When I was a kid, he once told me that when he was young, he used to love playing with butterflies. One day he watched a caterpillar shedding its cocoon, but it seemed to be having trouble and wasn't making any progress. So, in an effort to be helpful, he pulled out his penknife and cut off the remaining pieces of the cocoon. But rather than emerging as a precious butterfly, the caterpillar quickly died. My grandfather said that he later learned that it needed to experience the struggle of moving through the cocoon to grow into a butterfly. And by preventing this from happening, he denied the caterpillar the chance to fly. It seemed from what Ty was telling me that turbulent times and periods of struggle in business are, in truth, similar opportunities to grow wings and express our best. I remember when, as a ski instructor, I'd be teaching someone a lesson on the mountain, Ty continued. Let's say they were a pretty good skier when they first arrived. Then I'd take them through some exercises to teach them to ski even better. I'd share a few new concepts and offer them a bunch of advanced techniques. Well, guess what would happen to their skiing after my lesson? Obviously they'd improve, I replied. Nope, they'd actually ski worse.
No way, seriously?
Yep, but just for a short while, until the new learning had been integrated. See, Blake, part of the process of changing and growing is going from where you currently are to breaking down all you've known so you can rebuild in a way that's even better. Once again, skiing's a great metaphor for this. My client would learn all these fantastic new skills, but they disrupted the way they'd been skiing before they had their lesson with me. They needed to think differently and act differently in order to get to their next level of excellence as a skier. So they inevitably went through a period of transition filled with confusion. Breakdown, I repeated. Exactly. Their technique broke down and fell apart. It looked terrible. And some students would get frustrated, but they needed to be patient with the process of change and to stay at it, even though they felt like giving up and going back to the old way they thought and the old way they skied. Nothing was wrong, everything was right, and when they did persevere, it was amazing to see how fantastic their skiing became. So, the process of change is a chaotic one, but if we are persistent and patient, we'll get the breakthrough we all want? Yes. Change is always messiest in the middle, and it can look like nothing's working and zero is happening. But if you were doing your best to learn and make things better, you're actually moving closer to the breakthrough we all want. To master change, you absolutely must be persistent and have patience. As my clients practiced what I taught them and gave themselves some time to integrate the instruction, they never failed to get to a place where they saw stunning improvements in their technique. They always finished far better than they started. I never realized how great change actually is for us as people and for organizations in general, whether we're talking about business or schools, communities, or even countries, I mentioned. If you choose to allow it to be good, Ty informed me, it's always about choice. You can be a victim about the whole thing and feel the change is something being done to you, that it's some external force that you have no control over. Or I can use my natural power and step up to being a leader without a title, I interrupted. You got it, dude. And move from victimhood into leadership, exercising the choice that will make all the difference. You then arrive at the mindset where you embrace all the change and disruption and use it to your advantage. You leverage it to promote your leadership abilities. You exploit it to do your part to build a better business, regardless of whether or not you have the formal authority that a lofty title brings to do so. And you capitalize on all the change to help you step up to full self-expression so you grow into a greater and happier human being.
Very cool way to look at it all, Ty.
Problems are only problems when we make them problems. Victims cry, "Why me?" Leaders, on the other hand, shout, "It's up to me," Ty suggested with a quick smile. And then they hunt down superb opportunities to dedicate themselves to realizing exceptional results. This time, like all times, is a good time, if we know what to do with it, observed Ralph Waldo Emerson. "Hey," he shouted, "I almost forgot. I need to share my 5 rules with you. These are the 5 things to do, starting now, to really practice the lesson, turbulent times build great leaders. As you know, Blake, this is the 2nd of the 4 principles that make up the Lead Without a Title philosophy. I've got an acronym for you."
"You guys and your acronyms," I said warmly.
"Yeah, we love them, dude. But there's a reason behind them. Acronyms hook into your mind like a catchy pop song. Ours will make the 5 practical rules each of us are teaching you stay really sticky, so you'll never forget them."
"Perfect, Ty. So what's yours?"
"Spark," came his succinct reply. "Leading without a title has so much to do with being a light in a dark and turbulent world. Everything's so negative during these times of high-velocity transition. Everyone's so worried. Everyone's walking around in a state of real fear with no idea what the future will bring. What we need in business right now are more people who are truly bright lights, who show others a clear and hopeful way, who are real sparks in all that they do."
"Love the acronym," I stated sincerely.
"Dude, I'm happy you're happy. So let me get right into it. The S in SPARK stands for Speak with Candor. Leadership without a title has so much to do with being a pristine, truth-filled, and inspirational communicator. In topsy-turvy times, there's a natural tendency to hold back on candor, speak in vague generalities that mean nothing but preserve the status quo, and essentially talk in a way designed to protect your turf. But the problem with communication like that is that it breeds mistrust. The people around you would rather hear the truth as to the way things really are than some plastic sloganeering that you do to avoid confronting reality. And let me also ask you, how can you leverage the opportunities that massive change presents without speaking clearly about what's no longer working, where you all need to go as a team, and the direction you need to move in general as an organization?"
"You can't," I responded easily.
"Right. And so communicating like that isn't showing any leadership whatsoever. Like I say, people in business right now want to surround themselves with people who tell it like it is, who are candid, who are forthright, who are spectacularly honest. Delivering the naked truth and nothing but the naked truth promotes trust and respect for you. Your customers know that they'll get straight talk from you. Your teammates know that you won't play games, and you'll know you're behaving with integrity and courage. Yes, that kind of bold communication is rare these days, but amid all the uncertainty, people do want to know where they stand, and they really do appreciate people who are willing to be courageous enough to speak their truth, even when it's difficult. A leader without a title always has the difficult conversations that weaker and less excellent people shy away from. They always communicate in a way that's strikingly direct and stunningly real. They are always the first ones to speak their truth, even when their voices shake and their palms sweat.
They lean into difficult conditions, like the skier on the mountain peak, I noted, reflecting on Ty's main metaphor.
"I do like this one, Tommy," Ty said. "And by the way, simply because the person you need to speak clearly to might not like what they're hearing, or even really understand what you're saying, is no excuse for not expressing yourself truthfully. An important part of showing leadership is to be more committed to speaking honestly than receiving the approval of others."
He then glanced toward his friend. Tommy was looking pale again. He began to have trouble inhaling. Then he started to cough. I grew worried about him. This was the 2nd time in a matter of hours that my mentor looked unwell. At our first meeting at the bookstore, Tommy radiated vitality despite his advanced age. At the cemetery early this morning, he was in the greatest of spirits and seemed aglow with good health. But at this moment, in the Ty Boyd ski shop, Tommy looked frail and sick. "Everything okay, Tommy?" I questioned quickly and carefully.
"I'm not actually sure what's going on, Blake,"
he admitted hesitantly.
Ty looked concerned.
"We can stop if you'd like to, Tommy." "No, thanks, gentlemen. I'm grateful for your thoughtfulness, but I'll be fine. I want Blake to learn everything he needs to learn today, Ty. I really think he's the one who'll do some spectacular things with the LWT philosophy and get our little-known method to all the people in business and in society who have to hear it. He promised me he would, and so it's really important that we continue."
"I'm a man of my word, Tommy. I learned the importance of commitment when I joined the armed forces, and I'm going to honor our pact," I confirmed.
"I know you will, my friend. Please, just make sure you tell as many people as you possibly can about the lead without a title philosophy. That way they not only awaken their inner leader, but they in turn will inspire others to do the same. So let's continue. I'll be fine."
Ty nodded.
"Okay. An organization that has a culture where everyone's afraid to speak candidly is a place where people live amid delusion and fantasy. As I mentioned, how can you build a great company if no one's talking truthfully about what needs to improve? And especially in tough times, it's essential not only to communicate impeccably, but also to actually over-communicate with each of your stakeholders. Over-communicate with your teammates, over-communicate with your suppliers, over-communicate with your customers. Listen intensely to how each one of these constituencies is feeling. This prevents rumors from starting and gossip from spreading. It keeps all your relationships flawless, problems don't fester, misunderstandings don't grow, and people feel that you actually care about them and their concerns. By the way, related to all this is the importance of FaceTime."
"FaceTime?" I questioned.
"Yes. Never send an email when you can meet someone in person. Leave your work area and go talk to your teammate when you need to discuss something, or even to just reconnect. Break bread or at least spend quality time with your customers as much as you can. Don't hide behind technology when the personal touch is called for. And the final thing I'll say about communication and speaking with candor is that if something's important to someone important to you, it should become important to you as well."
"I like that idea, Ty. If something's important to someone important to me, it should become important to me as well."
"It's a great practice to follow, dude. It has helped me so much in running this shop. Some of my customers have been coming here for over 20 years. They'll drive an hour out of their way just to give me their business. Loyalty's like that. Anyway, I guess all I'm really offering to you is that in times like these, you just can't communicate too much. And that one of the most important jobs of a leader without a title is to share accurate information, an abundance of hope, and an inspiring vision for better days to a scared organization. Be a professional communicator. That's just part of what you get paid to do."
"Sometimes I wonder whether, if I'm too honest in my communication with people I work with at the bookstore, I'll offend them," I offered, as I thought through Ty's teaching aloud.
"There's a difference between being candid and being rude, Blake. Use your good judgment, and simply remember, you can say whatever you want, so long as you say it with respect."
"Another good line," I acknowledged positively.
"And one that translates into excellent results within the workplace," interjected Tommy,
as he flipped through a skiing magazine, appearing to feel a little better.
"It's true," Ty continued. "You can speak with candor and express all you really need to say to anyone, so long as it's languaged in a way that's respectful and allows the listener to protect their self-worth. And that's really important. Words can sting, man. People will remember something hurtful that was said to them 20 years after the event. Words have that much power. And yet most of us forget that. We speak harshly and injure those around us through the loose use of our lips. We write things that can be unkind and use words that can insult. The best leaders operate so differently from this. In every interaction, they remind people of their best and inspire people to be better. Superb leaders also employ encouraging, supportive, and positive words that provoke others into dazzling action.
Just look at what leaders like John F. Kennedy, Gandhi, Mandela, and Martin Luther King Jr. were able to do through the sheer power of their words.
I never really thought of words having power.
They really do. Your words can show people possibilities they never knew existed. Your words can make people feel happier about themselves. Your words can activate people to break through their limiting behaviors and work brilliantly during the most stressful days. Look, Blake, if someone's making a lot of mistakes, the common way of dealing with them is to say, "You're not doing a good job and things better improve." But that kind of communication discourages people. Yes, be candid and clear. Of course, be a strong leader. But why not say, "I appreciate that you're putting in a lot of effort, and I'd like to share some of the opportunities I see for you to take your performance to its next level." Most business people speak so negatively. They fall into the trap of thinking that they need to use tough talk to get big results. But you'll get so much more speaking encouragingly. You can say exactly what you need to say, but using uplifting words. It's all in the languaging, and master communicators understand that. And by the way, I should also mention that your words can influence your own state of being as well.
Really?
No doubt. The words that come out of your mouth determine how you feel. Calling some challenging scenario a disaster generates a specific emotional response within you, one completely different from characterizing it as interesting or a platform for improvement. The language we use affects whether we respond to some setback optimistically or apathetically. And you should know that your words are really nothing more than your thoughts made verbal. Your language broadcasts your beliefs.
And our beliefs drive our behaviors, which in turn create all of our results, I spoke up.
Yup. Leaders without a title are truly impeccable with the words they use. They don't gossip, they don't complain, they don't condemn, and they never swear. The only words they try their best to use each day are those that inspire, engage, and elevate.
Not only those around them, but themselves.
Right, confirmed Ty. So watch every word you use. You'll be surprised at how refining your leadership vocabulary improves your energy levels, your passion for excellence, the pace of innovation, and the way you play the entire game. The words coming out of your mouth also shape the words coming out of the mouths of everyone around you, because you influence others by your example. Words are viral, and so by using the language of leadership, the whole culture of your organization improves. I should also mention that you'll strengthen what you speak about. So if you spend a lot of time grumbling and complaining about all the stress and change that you were experiencing at work, you actually heighten the stress and change in your awareness. What you focus on grows, and where your words go, your energy flows. So speaking about something amplifies it within your perception, because you're giving your attention and energy to it. As the father of modern psychology, William James, said, "Our experience is what we attend to." Really dig deep into that statement, dude. It's unbelievably valuable. If you badmouth a colleague, you actually heighten those negative points in your thinking. If you continually complain about what's broken in your career or within your personal life, you'll actually see more of the very things you most wish to avoid. Words have power.
So, leadership has a lot to do with developing a leadership vocabulary, I reiterated, to further integrate my learning.
It does. It truly does, Blake. Make using world-class language a top goal. And that brings me to the P in Spark. P stands for prioritize. With all the turbulence in business now, it's so easy to get disconnected from your mission, vision, values, and goals. When things feel like they are falling apart, there's a powerful pull to get nailed by the seduction of distraction. But leaders without a title stick to their knitting. They stay centered upon what's truly most important. They have the mission discipline to stay grounded on their fundamentals. And they work and live by a simple idea. Focus on the best and neglect all the rest. Operating by this mantra alone is one of the main secrets to their astounding results. Another way to think of the big idea I'm sharing is to consider that leadership is about knowing very little about most things and a staggering amount about a few things. But they become fantastic at the few things they focus on. Focus, 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 to the point of obsession.
Isn't obsession unhealthy? I asked.
Not if it's a healthy obsession. Developing a burning desire to do great work because it serves as a vehicle to help you express your absolute best is incredibly healthy. Becoming addicted to the building of an exceptional organization that offers extraordinary products and services to other human beings is truly wonderful. Growing driven by an intense pursuit to turn your fears into power and your weakness into strength is a tremendously positive pursuit. So no, focusing obsessively on the things that matter most to you isn't unhealthy. It's actually how you win in this world of too many choices and too much information.
I'm all over the place at work, Ty, I admitted. I just can't seem to concentrate on one thing for very long. And with all the phone calls, emails, and the steady stream of other interruptions, at the end of most days, I definitely feel I've been busy but have not gotten much done. And that feeling just adds to my overwhelm.
And even if you were shifting from busyness to getting things done, it's also key to remember that getting things done is not the same as doing great things. Too many of us are really busy being busy during these times of utter uncertainty and tumultuous change. Lots of us are running a lot faster, yet actually achieving a lot less. Here's something to be thinking about constantly. Being in the process of shifting from chaotic complexity to elegant simplicity. In these times of turbulence and fundamental upheaval, it's really easy to get unfocused and to become superb at being busy doing things rather than being productive creating smart results. But why be brilliantly busy around useless pursuits? No point in spending your days climbing a series of mountains only to realize that in the end you scaled the wrong ones. What a sheer waste of your three most precious leadership resources, your time, your talent, and most important, your energy. Personal energy is the single most valuable asset in business today. You can be a genius, have a world of gorgeous opportunities, and a plan to make it all happen. But if you have no energy each day, nothing gets done. With all the turbulence and deep change out there, it's never been so easy to get distracted, to spend your days doing the wrong things, to major in the minors, and that depletes your energy. So much smarter to be productive and to focus on real results.
Makes so much sense, Ty.
The best leaders stay staggeringly focused on the biggest to-dos. They have the fiery resolve to have an almost military-like concentration on their best opportunities and refuse to be sidetracked by anything else. They have the inner discipline to stick to their knitting and say no to all else. Get to know your priorities well, then have the self-awareness and execution intelligence to strip away everything else. Hey, I know I sound like some CEO, but I'm just an ordinary dude. But I read constantly and love the great game of business. It's a lot like sports, just so exciting. Anyway, what I'm suggesting to you, Blake, is that you need to shift from complexity to simplicity by cutting out all the low-impact activities of your workdays to make room for an obsessive focus around your high-impact ones.
Really helpful ideas, Ty, I noted.
I've not only read a ton of business books, I've also read a bunch of biographies. I love getting behind the eyeballs of history's greatest people. I've realized that leadership and success are like a secret code that most people don't know. Peak performers all do the same practices, and doing what they do, I get their results.
You cracked the code, I suggested, as I took a sip of water.
Exactly, replied Ty, pleased with my response. I remember reading a book about Michelangelo, the great sculptor. He had a very cool technique to make his masterpieces. First, he'd see the perfect version of the sculpture he envisioned in the rough block of marble, and then he would chip away all the extra stone. The same idea applies at work as you lead without a title. Cut away all the trivial stuff so you can get down to business. Use every minute of your time doing only those things that will get you nearer to where you want to go. Do fewer but better things, Blake, because the person who tries to achieve everything ultimately accomplishes nothing. Focus, 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 he repeated for emphasis. Ty quickly added, I suggest that you remember the 80-20 rule. 80% of your results come from 20% of your activities. get intimately and acutely connected with those few and precious practices that generate the vast majority of your results, and then get really, really good at doing those few things. Be exceptionally economic in your actions, and you'll see exceptionally excellent results. Leaders without a title live and breathe their vital few.
Vital few? I asked, unfamiliar with yet another term.
Your vital few are the few core